Welcome back to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. According to Forbes, South Dakota ranks 14th in the magazine's latest list of the best states for business, but in that same survey, the state is at the top for the cost of doing business. In 2013, CNBC named South Dakota America's top state for business. These and other surveys suggest that the state is one of the country's economic bright spots. In his new book, Little Business on the Prairie, Entrepreneurship, Prosperity, and Challenge in South Dakota, Augustana College business historian Robert Wright explores the economic history of South Dakota. He argues that an economy with disadvantages such as low population density and long distances for major markets can still thrive if governed efficiently. Wright is the Neff Family Chair of Political Economy at Augustana. He joins us on the line, and Professor Wright, welcome back to Dakota Midday.
Thanks for having me, Carl.
Well, in doing research for this book, did you find certain things about South Dakota's history and the personality of the people that help create a business climate that makes it different from other states?
Sure. You know, we were founded by miners out in the Black Hills who were essentially entrepreneurs, and also by homesteaders on the prairie, who were also essentially entrepreneurs, and you know, many of them didn't make it, but those who stuck it out certainly you know, carried on that entrepreneurial culture, and you know, it's not in people's DNA per se, but the more entrepreneurs that are around, the more entrepreneurs that are created, because people who are thinking about starting their own businesses have family, friends, neighbors they can turn to for advice and comfort.
Is there a close relationship between entrepreneurship and economic growth and strength?
Oh, absolutely. You know, there are a couple naysayers out there, as there is with anything, but most economists believe that entrepreneurship is what really fuels the economy. It's the lifeblood of the economy. Most startups, of course, fail within the first 5 years, but those that don't create lots of quality jobs and can change entire sectors, industries, or even entire economies.
Do successful entrepreneurs, are they the only, I guess I'm looking back to the entrepreneurs that fail, do they have an impact on the prosperity and the economic climate, economic climate of South Dakota?
Well, many of, I mean, some of them just, you know, failed at being X or Y, but then went on to other things and were successful. They're known as serial entrepreneurs, S-E-R-I-A-L, and some of them were serial entrepreneurs in cereals, right? They would try wheat, and it wouldn't work, and so they would switch to, you know, to rye, and maybe that would fly, or switch to corn or soybeans until they found something that that worked on their land. Others discovered that they were not, you know, built for the rigors of farm life, and some of those moved to towns where they would set up shops, or even begin inventing things. And in the book, I tell the story of, you know, quite a few inventors in South Dakota making all kinds of interesting things, from semi-automatic shotguns to bicycles that had tires that wouldn't slip on ice, to folks who were big in the early automobile and aviation industries.
Now, you write about innovative and replicative entrepreneurs. What is the difference between these two categories of entrepreneurs?
Well, and actually to that, I add a third, but thankfully we don't have many of them in South Dakota, so they don't come up prominently in the book. But the third would be exploitative entrepreneurs, and those are folks who basically steal from others. either illegally or by using the government to get subsidies and whatnot. The innovative entrepreneurs are, you know, your Thomas Edisons and your Elon Musks, to take examples from today. There are people who develop new inventions or new ways of doing business that are really transformative. The replicative entrepreneurs take an existing product and simply extend it over space, or apply an existing product to a new market. So we've had our fill of both, but of course most entrepreneurs in any time and place are replicative.
So in South Dakota, it's like anywhere else, it's dominated by the replicative entrepreneurs?
Yeah, so, you know, the farmer who pushes into the next county, or the rancher who pushes across the Missouri River, right? The retailer who moves to a frontier town, that sort of thing. But of course, we've also had plenty of innovative entrepreneurs and entrepreneurial companies like Raven and Dectronics.
Now, looking at the state's economy, business history as a whole, is it one that is dominated by agriculture, or over the years has it been broader than that, more diverse?
It's been much more diverse, and agriculture is still relatively important in South Dakota. It was about 13% of the state's output in 1990, for example, while nationally it was only about 2%. But 13% is still not a majority, right? It's been sliding basically since World War II, and other parts of the economy have grown. Tourism, of course, is a big one, and healthcare, and what's termed FIRE, or finance, insurance, and real estate businesses.
You're listening to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. We're talking with Robert Wright. He's got a new book out called Little Business on the Prairie, Entrepreneurship, Prosperity, and Challenge in South Dakota. He's the Neff Family Chair of Political Economy at Augustana in Sioux Falls. The book is published by Augustana's Center for Western Studies. And Professor Wright, you've been in South Dakota, I think, for about 6 years, coming from the east. Were there certain things that you noticed about the state's business climate and economic history when you came here, things that really grabbed your attention?
The relative freedom, the low cost of doing business, and the ability to be flexible with the workforce and so forth is starkly different from my home state of New York, which has suffered due to its high taxes and political corruption and its inability to change its regulations to keep up with the changing business environment, to the point that New York's been depopulated to some extent, and they're now trying to implement South Dakota-like policies, like lowering taxes for new businesses, though they are only promising a decade of lower taxes rather than a permanent status. So I'm trying to get people on both coasts to understand that they can improve their economies if they would just look to places like South Dakota become more economically free.
Is that one of the reasons for writing the book, Little Business on the Prairie, to share this information and this perspective with people on the coasts?
Absolutely, because South Dakota is often conflated with North Dakota on both coasts. Occasionally, you'll run into somebody from one of the coasts who thinks that South Dakota is in the South. That it's someplace between South Carolina and Georgia or whatever. But most of the time, you know, they hear South Dakota and they say, oh, wow, yeah, so you have oil in your backyard? No, we don't. In fact, we hardly have any fossil fuels within the entire borders of the state. And the Minneapolis Fed pointed out that, you know, we don't really get any direct economic benefit from the boom in Williston and Northwest North Dakota and Eastern Montana. It's you know, which is the same distance from Sioux Falls, roughly, as you know, Boston to Cleveland. So it's not surprising there are no direct effects there. So the question arises: why do we have such a low unemployment rate? And why is our per capita income above the national median at this point? So it was questions like that that I tried to answer in the book.
In you're talking about governmental policy and the role that plays in a state's economic economics, its business climate. You know, looking at the big picture, how important is the governmental policy?
Well, I mean, at the national level, it's been very clear that it's quite crucial. There are countries that have very little going for them in terms of things like natural resources or location that have done extremely well economically. And there are places that are just teeming with natural resources and are close to markets, and, you know, they're miserably poor. And what it comes down to is the quality of their government. And their institutions, and how much economic freedom they allow their citizens. So, you know, between the states of the United States and the provinces in Canada, these economic freedom scores have been calculated, but there aren't vast differences between them. So that's why there, you know, there's not vast differences in income. So. What I do, instead of comparing South Dakota to other states, I compare South Dakota to the Indian reservations within the state, which, of course, you know, South Dakota creates great prosperity, but also great poverty. Five of the seven poorest counties in the United States are located within its borders. So I apply that that notion of economic freedom to that question. And it becomes, you know, very apparent that the economic freedom of Indians living on reservations is practically nil. And so it's little wonder that incomes are so low there and that we see the social problems there.
Yeah, you write quite a bit about the economies of South Dakota's Indian reservations in South Dakota. Does it seem like it's governmental policies that are the, you know, having the biggest detrimental effects over the history in creating more thriving economies on reservations? Do you think that, you know, they don't necessarily see that they own their own land, that sort of thing?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And you know, to be clear, this isn't so much a problem in Pierre as it is in Washington. Because it's really federal policies that, you know, are the things that are reducing economic freedom for Native Americans. The state doesn't help a heck of a lot, but it's not Pierre's, you know, main issue, because, you know, the tribes are primarily regulated by the federal government.
Now, at the final chapter in Little Business on the Prairie, Professor Wright, you list some challenges, and one goes back to something we were just talking about before, which was the state's image. How can South Dakota improve that image elsewhere? I mean, there's this recent campaign, "Why Die on Mars When You Can Live in South Dakota?" Something like that, very helpful.
Well, you know, when I first heard that, I never saw any of the commercials, but when I was first told about it, you know, it seemed unbelievable to me. And my only thought is that if you come out with, you know, sort of a regular campaign, no one's going to pay attention to it, right? So in a sense, I'm hoping that they were playing off the notion that there's no such thing as bad publicity. And making such a bad pitch actually got people to hear the state name. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Because it was made fun of in so many places.
Yeah, it was on the late night talk show host. They were talking about it.
So it was successful in that kind of perverse sense, you know, just kind of like the Don't Jerk and Drive campaign over the winter was in a sense successful because it got people talking about South Dakota. The question is, how do we drive them towards more substantive appreciation for what's happening here? And that's really the difficult thing.
How important is it, though, that South Dakota has, a better image, that boosters are able to get people outside of the state interested in South Dakota? I mean, how important is it that we have outside capital, outside business interests here, showing some interest in South Dakota?
Well, I guess it depends on how well-situated you are. I guess we could sort of be like Alaska, where the last person to enter wants to be the last one ever, so that they don't ruin the state's natural beauty. So we don't want a million New Yorkers and New Jerseyans flooding into South Dakota. That's for sure, right? But that's not going to happen anyway. What we need are specific people to fill specific roles, and sometimes I'm told by business people and indirectly by the governor that that's a challenge sometimes. So if we had a better general sense of what South Dakota has to offer, then it would be easier to attract those specific candidates that we need to fill particular jobs in the state.
In looking at the other challenges facing South Dakota, looking forward to the future, quickly, another challenge perhaps that you see is very important in the state's continued economic health?
Well, one thing that I didn't mention in the book, because it was kind of emerging as I was wrapping up the book, is the initiated ballot measures. There were two that passed last fall and that limit economic freedom. And my understanding is that there's another one that's going to be pitched in an upcoming election that's going to limit economic freedom further by reintroducing a usury cap or a maximum interest rate in the state. So too many of these could start to hurt the state's economy.
And finally, looking at South Dakota, it's one of 50 states. How can South Dakota thrive even when the national economy is struggling? The state is obviously closely intertwined with what's happening nationally. How can South Dakota weather the storm if there are economic difficulties, for the nation as a whole?
Yeah, well, certainly if the whole U.S. economy tanks, South Dakota is going to go down the tubes with it. But if there are problems in specific areas, like we saw back in 2008, that doesn't necessarily translate into bad news for South Dakota. It could translate into good news. So there were people who lost their houses in the subprime mortgage crisis that ended up moving to South Dakota, for example, because we didn't experience any of that boom and bust in the real estate market, right? As long as the overall U.S. economy doesn't tank, South Dakota and its entrepreneurs, who of course are very nimble and adept at finding, new areas to try to make profits, the state economy will adapt and much more quickly than most other places.
Robert Wright's new book is Little Business on the Prairie, Entrepreneurship, Prosperity, and Challenge in South Dakota. It's published by the Center for Western Studies. Robert Wright is the Neff Family Chair of Political Economy at Augustana College in Sioux Falls. And Professor Wright, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us on Dakota Midday.
Thanks for having me, Carl. It was great.